At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hope you're having a great weekend. It's our week in review. A look back at some of the most compelling stories, conversations that we've had throughout the week. Hope you enjoy.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Talking more with Robin Dreeke, retired FBI special agent, chief of counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, about Brian Koberger. And I'm really curious to get your specific thoughts on some of the items that were seized from the home. In part of this, I can look at this and go, well, I would imagine, honestly, if you looked at almost any home in this part of the country in winter, you might find these items in Pennsylvania or any northern state. They seized a Glock 22 with three empty magazines, which was in the home. It could have been his dad's. It could have been anybody's. I mean, there's many people who have a Glock in their house and it's safe. Knives, again, okay. I'm curious in the context as to where they found these items would be my first question. Are they just going through the house? And maybe you could give me some insight on this from an FBI perspective of, are they just going through the house and going, we found these things in your parents' house and we're going to take them? Or would they be looking for things more specific as to in the possession of Koberger and his room and his stuff?
So what they're going to do is, in this kind of case, they're going to search the entire house since he had access to the entire house. Mm-hmm. So again, I didn't read the affidavit, but most likely that's what they had access to do. And so they're going to inventory everything. They're going to mark down where they found it, what drawer it was in, what it was around. They're going to photograph everything. I mean, it's really a laborious, incredibly boring process.
Sure.
For me, I am. It is for some people, they are into it. But it is... And that's why nothing on that list really struck out to me. I know people have made some mention of the masks as being as a real standout, but all the other items didn't really strike me as odd or anything else. The knife, yeah. The gun, it doesn't even matter where they're found in a house. None of that really struck me as.
No,
I mean, nothing stood out.
No. I mean, the black mask. I mean, if you're just looking at it and you're looking for something, you can go, oh, these are spooky items. But if you're in Pennsylvania, I mean, I grew up in Wisconsin, but we both have similar type winters. There's, I would say probably, I don't know, 7 out of 10 homes in winter, there's going to be black masks in the house.
Yeah.
For the bad cold weather. If you're not from that area, you'd probably go, why would you have that? But because it's so cold and to go out there and shovel snow or something, you need like a face mask to protect yourself from the elements. So that really wasn't that shocking to me that would have been in the house. Gloves. These are really, like I said, things that could be in almost any home. You put it into the context of a murder scene, or not a murder scene, but just a murder, potential murderer. They become a little more, you know, spooky. But again, I don't know that they really speak to much.
Yeah, me neither. And when I looked at the search return, they showed the knife as number one on there. Well, yeah. I mean, so when you're part of the evidence response team that goes in there, if you see something as you're, because what happens is agents and collectors go throughout the house and they start bagging and tagging, they call it, all the things in a room, and they place them in that room. And then there's one person, one lead team member that is in charge of collecting all of it and categorizing it and putting it on those sheets and making the return so that it can be signed off by the resident. I mean, and that we saw his dad signed off it, I believe it said. As you are, as a human being, as you're seeing things that you think might be of interest, of higher interest to investigators, you're going to put those higher on the list as you see them coming in. That's why I think we saw the knife as the first thing. Is everyone's, oh, the knife. They found the knife. And they found a lot of knives.
No, they found a knife.
Yeah, like, I didn't think that was anything really critical. They were just following procedure on this entire thing, but nothing really struck me as standing out with the research as the search was.
Yeah, I mean, unless there's some sort of DNA evidence or something that connects it to that scene, it's just it could be kitchen equipment, really.
Now the thing I thought they did a really, really good job on that makes more sense is, from what I understood, they really tore that car apart.
Yeah.
and that's where you're going for all the DNA type stuff. So as if, you know, anything that would not necessarily you're looking for his DNA, what you're doing is you're looking for any of the girl's DNA or the guy's DNA that's in that car, mm-hmm. that they can link to. All right, he carried that back from the scene with him into the car. That's what they're doing there.
Yeah, that's what they'd be looking for, I believe, within the apartment where they searched, correct? Where they found some red or darkish brown stains that might have been blood, and wondering, not necessarily Koberger's DNA, because that will be there regardless. It's trying to find something pulled back from the crime scene that would be still with him.
Yeah. So I think they just did a really good job on that case. Mostly because I still go back to, and I've mentioned this on a few other shows too, I think the relationship that law enforcement department had with the community was strong enough that they were able to do a lot with the community. Mm-hmm. To gather information. You know, we saw some of the communication confusion early on, mm-hmm. but that was because anytime anyone or any organization is faced with something for the first time at a certain level, there's going to be a lot of chaos. And there's generally, I always say, there's no standard operating procedure for chaos mm-hmm. if you never faced it before. You know, and so as I think as they started seeing that the chaos they were creating with their communications, that's why they just locked it down. And that's why it looked like it, things weren't moving, but they were doing a good job moving things.
It was amazing because there was a lot of criticism on the outside. I myself included was being very critical of it because it did look chaotic. It looked very unorganized, but on the inside, it seemed to be a very well-oiled machine. Thank goodness.
Yeah. The thing that really impressed me was you have a young corporal that they put in charge of the investigation he had 6 years doing this, I think. Mm-hmm. And what a great lead to put on this, you know, because here's someone with not necessarily a lot of experience, but he had the confidence and the humility. And that's a great dichotomy to have in balance, because that's a sense I got from that lead. Mm-hmm. And he had all these resources at his disposal, because I was asked a lot about, oh, they only have so many profilers working on this and they have, you know, this many agents or FBIs involved. And I'm looking at all these resources at the disposal of this one corporal. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. And when you bring in the technological resources, that's really good. And the way they had the state police pull them over a couple times on the way home, I've seen that even in my counterintelligence investigations. We've worked closely with law enforcement partners. And so that takes coordination. And so when you start seeing that kind of level of coordination with one focal point, as I call it, one point of failure, and that point of failure is that young corporal that he knew who was in charge. It was him, and he wasn't distracted by anything, it appears. So good on him.
Yeah. With the being pulled over, I don't believe that they've ever said that was officially planned or not. Is that something that they just would never really need to disclose to the public? Just, you know, basic, you know, the kind of procedures and things of that nature.
I apologize. I thought that was coordinated with the FBI. Generally, we would do that. So what we do is typically when because FBI, if we're involved in anything, we're not first responders with that kind of jurisdiction to do that. Mm-hmm. And so we'll typically, because we also want to hide in plain sight, we want to make it part of a natural thing so that no one thinks they're under suspicion, so they run away.
Sure.
And whether it was coordinated or not, I thought it was, but maybe it wasn't. But no, that was a good job.
I've heard conflicting on both ways on that, and I don't believe there's been like an official answer either way. But nor does
I would. Yeah. I would definitely say they were on my optic and my point of view. That was definitely coordinated.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Robin Drake, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your time today. Retired FBI Special Agent and Chief of Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates on the cases we are covering for you. The complete list is in the episode description. In fact, we have specific podcast channels for each of those cases. You want to follow one specifically, go there and press subscribe or follow. You even get a commercial-free experience when you sign up through Apple Podcasts right now. We greatly appreciate that support. I am Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.